Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. The show is sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as republicreview.org. Well, no tangent? No tangent. We're going to try to focus today because there's a lot of meat. As I told you, there is a lot of coverage regarding the militia and how important the militia was viewed by the framers in instituting and establishing our hybrid constitutional republic. They had disdain for standing armies, and they had every reason to be cautious of trying to institute one, which is why they put the barriers in place. So that in the Constitution, the mechanism for internal national security was the militia, and it still is. They've never amended the Constitution, and because they didn't do a good job in keeping the definitions of the Constitution, in other words, because they didn't maintain the ratification debates, what should have happened? So I'm going to go on a tangent. Forgive me. But what should have happened every time a new state joined the Union, Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, even Maine, Missouri, all of the new states, all 50 states, whenever a new state joined the Republic, what should have happened was that new state should have received in their hands a copy of all of the state's ratification debates so that that state could be apprised as to how the federal government or the general government was defined and what their limitations were and what they could do and what everything meant in the Constitution. That would have been the best method in maintaining and ensuring that everybody was diligent in keeping the general government in check, because the framers knew that if they would have created a general government with a general constitution, in other words, instead of having enumerated powers, having general powers granted to them, then they knew that the federal government was going to go overboard or run rickshaw over the states. And so these men were very, very wise. And so we want to get into more on the militia, because if I don't read these things, then you're just taking my word for it. And so, and I've yet to have somebody call and say, hey, please don't. I honestly believe that you enjoy learning the facts, and these facts, it's just like that old adage, knowledge is power. And when I give you and instill knowledge on facts regarding the Constitution, it empowers you more to understanding what we're not doing and what has to happen to get the federal government back into check. That's why, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, those who have been listening to the show for the past year, or at least for a long enough time, you know that you are listening to the only show that has the tangible solution in getting the general government back into the scope of the Constitution. And that process is auditing, started by one state, and when all the states pull together, they start creating the form of Republic Review. Because Republic Review is really a process. It's not just the auditing, but it is a process of determining the disposition of all the unconstitutional government and what to do with it and so forth, because that's not really left for one state. You need to have enough of the Republic in representation to make those determinations. And technically, that number today, I think, is 26 or 27 states. So we just need a minor majority of the Republic to be able to dictate to the general government what has to happen. And so a little bit of a peek behind the veil there, but we are going to get into some marketing before I get into the militia. So, because I didn't get a chance to finish yesterday, and there might be something of newsworthy to report. Not really. I mean, it's just the same old crap that's just not going away. But let me grovel. If you want to get involved, we need your help. We can't do this without you. And so if you want to get involved, there's different ways. You can obviously do the easy thing and just give us some money. We're not taking money, as I constantly say, we're not taking money as salary. We're only looking to have the supplementation for travel. Nothing is compensating me for my time. Nothing is compensating me for my efforts or what have you. All we're looking for is so we don't have the tangible costs of travel. And so if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, we have a GoFundMe link. By all means, throw some love at us. You know, we would appreciate anything. However, if you don't have money and you want to get involved, we do need help in starting in new states. So just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And we will be happy to get you started in showing you what you can do and how you can lead in your county and state. If you want to also get involved in suppressing this, or actually rescinding the 17th Amendment, go to the Constitution Club, and that's theconstitutionclub.ning.com, and get with Keith Broders and his organization so that you can start helping by sending emails and so forth, because there are what do you call those, petitions and scripts that they have. You just cut and paste and boom, send it off. That way you can be a part of the solution. There is also our First Right, who are trying to get the amendment, the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights passed, because there were 12 bills or there are 12 amendments to the Constitution, and only the first 10, or actually not the first 10, but there were only 10. I think it was the last 10. The first two amendments did not get passed. And so our First Right is the First Amendment out of those 12. So go take a look at what they're trying to pass. What we want to do is expand representation back, or get representation back to a reasonable level, so that there is, I think, 30 or 50,000, I think it's 50,000 citizens to one representative, and capping it so that they can't have and represent hundreds of thousands or millions of people, which is basically what they're doing today. In context to all of that, I want to thank you for tuning in, and thank you for helping this show grow. I will say that there is no sign, because I did scan the news, and there is no sign that the federal government is getting rid of any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers, which means, my friends, it's up to you and me. We're going to have to do this. And so let's just dive forward so that we can get through some of this marketing, because as I read these things, I want you to start thinking about, man, I can't believe that things are so... We have been so busy in doing good things in our own lives that while we have been looking away from behind the curtains of the federal government, state government, and so forth, and the bureaucracies, that they have done so many things that it just makes your head spin. And yesterday I was talking about the insanity of the global secular progressives' fixation on sex. In context to yesterday's two cases I talked about, where in one case, the royal family, Merkel and Harry, are going to have their child raised in a gender-fluid environment. In other words, they're planning on enforcing gender-fluid environments in Britain. The other case, or the other issue, was in Canada. A court basically allowed a 14-year-old to get hormone treatments, usurping the parents' consent, a 14-year-old. Now, so if you understand the dangers this is doing to, one, her body, and to, you know, to these kids, and actually there's a really good video of a doctor that talks about the many things in a person's DNA that cannot be altered by these hormones. There's like, if I remember correctly, there's over 5,000 factors are traits and things within the DNA that identify a person's gender. And so even though somebody goes through the hormonal treatments and, you know, morphs themselves slightly, it is literally just slightly, because there are still lots of things that still make you the same gender that you've tried to leave, because you can't alter your DNA to that level. And I'm glad we haven't gotten there, because when we get there, I think that we will be unleashing a can of worms on society that, there's just no turning back, because I think that that's where people will be doing all sorts of real evil things. But this clearly is a sign of those who want to drive society towards unabashed individual gratification. Laws are being passed that are taking away a parent's right to raise their children and to give them the proper care. As I told you yesterday, Hacktop Hillary's book, It Takes a Village, literally puts a government social worker into the home to manage what that child is being given as far as information as they grow up. If we get to that point, if you understand what that means that the state is in every facet, and even in the most intimate factors of your life, that they're there to dictate the kind of information so that you don't give your kids religious dogma in making them become, you know, hostile towards the state. Are you getting this? Are you understanding what's going on? And if you are, what is it going to take to get involved? Well, we got more. So please stay tuned, and I've got some more marketing. We'll be right back after this. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so where was I? I know we were talking about these laws that are usurping parents' rights. And I know that we have gone down a lot of different pushes from the secular progressives, from a global level as well as a national level. And so one little fact that I know about science, because it took a while as they started promoting, oh, why can't everybody be parents? Everybody can be just as good a parent as heterosexual parents. And remember, it takes time to measure results. In other words, you may start doing something. Let's say you start smoking cigarettes. You don't know the effects of cigarettes, you know, after you've had one. It takes a long time in the use of cigarettes for it to start manifesting. It takes lots of cases to start creating an understanding and or trend of what can happen when you start doing that, smoking cigarettes, whatever it is. And they have come out with a lot of analysis regarding children being raised in all the different families. And hands down, children are better off with a mommy and a daddy, their natural parents, as a matter of fact, but with a mommy and a daddy in, you know, a loving family and so forth. And as a matter of fact, they've proven that kids go farther, they'll go to college and those types of things, and they'll have a much more successful life if they're in that type of family. When you start putting them into alternate families, then they have more problems. And that's what happens when you actually start measuring results over time. So what's going on as they start taking away the parental rights? They're allowing children who have no wisdom, no grounding in making decisions of what they think is best for them. You know, it's like, have you ever let your child decide what they're going to have for dinner and they go like candy or cake or what have you? That is not, that's a fool's work, and that's a fool's errand in allowing a child to raise themselves. And so the state understands what the child will want to do, and the child will embellish themselves in the desires that are destructive. And bottom line, it's going to take a while, and the damage that is going to occur, because remember, it took time for us to start measuring results regarding children and families. And look at how many kids had committed suicide and so forth since that point in time, and the damage that it had already done. Why is it that we have to rush into these bad designs? And then once we get into them, there's no backing out. Remember, there was no backing out of removing school prayer. And the fact is that we have debased our society and become a far more immoral society. And what would happen if we back that out? We might actually go back towards a more moral society. But no, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, we're going down. And they want to debase this society as fast as they possibly can. They know what they're doing. There's no doubt in my mind. They know what they're doing, and it is a very destructive direction that they're taking us. One of the things I didn't get a chance to tell you is SCOTUS yesterday, there was this possibility of SCOTUS actually hearing a case where the New Jersey is deciding not to spend money on preserving church buildings that are historic. And this is due to the fact that they believe it's a separation of church and state, that the state shouldn't be spending any money on preserving the history if it's a church building. And I'm going, well, first off, the Supreme Court shouldn't be hearing a case like that. And second off, it's an indictment on New Jersey and our society when we've gone down this path, that they don't recognize that history has many different aspects and angles to it. We have history of, you know, financial history, emotional history, demographic type of history, religious history, and so forth. And history is important. But the other question I have is how much time and how much money should we actually be spending on trying to preserve history in that fashion and trying to just keep that relic and or that edifice, you know, up, and then spending money in maintaining it? You know, I've gone to Monticello. I've gone to Vernon Estates, where Washington, you know, lived and so forth. And I remember taking those tours, and I guess there may be some, you know, the charges that they charge people to coming through may have a maintenance of maintaining and all of that. But I'm not sure if there's necessarily that much in revenues in covering some of the costs and those types of things. And I think we're in a time and age where, you know, I don't know if we necessarily need to preserve those types of things. One of the things that I thought was amazing is with technology, I know that they went in with high-definition cameras and actually viewed and imaged every single square inch of the Sistine Chapel with all the great artworks and so forth that were in that. I think it's I forget the artist, Michael D. Anyway, you know, I'm bad with names. So I know that they went in there with high-end graphics, video cameras, and I know SGI was involved in that. And you could actually, because you'd never be able to do this on your own, but you could actually walk through and look at all of the different artifacts and pieces in the Sistine Chapel, and they've done this in other places. Why don't we do something very similar to some of these other edifices and then just, I want to say let them go, but let them go to a private industry. If somebody wants to actually own those historical edifices, then let them, because they want to make a commercial endeavor. You know, one of the things that I'd learned about the Field of Dreams, because I knew the guy that built the field. He was a neighbor of mine, and he actually went out there. Athletic Turfs was the company that built that, and that was his company. And he told me about, you know, some interesting things about the Field of Dreams. And one of the things is that the people that lived there wanted to get that field, the filming of that field, done as soon as they possibly could so they could plant some corn. And so as soon as they were done filming all of the parts that they needed for the night game and all of that, the farmer went through and plowed it all out and planted. And he had pictures. My friend had pictures of this new corn growth, and you could actually see the lights of the field out in the cornfields where the corn was now growing. Because this guy, you know, that corn meant money to him. He needed to make money because that's how he made money. And not that he wasn't making money by them renting out his home and property. He saw the opportunity of making more money by growing corn again. Well, so what ended up happening was people, you know, knew where this film was taken. So people actually started going, like the following year and what have you, and as he was trying to grow corn, people wanted to go and run the bases and so forth. And finally, the bright light went off, and he said, you know what? I ought to let charge people for coming and running the bases and playing a little ball and so forth. So he actually, you know, restored. He had to have this company come back out and restore the field so that he could let people do that. But that became a commercial endeavor. Now, I think you can still go there today and run the bases and all of that. But some of the things, and I don't want to get into all the idiosyncrasies of the owner of the property, but it was just kind of funny how people with their paradigms, sometimes they don't see the big picture. And I think that there's great opportunities that we have in recording and, you know, measuring and capturing history at Monticello and those types of things, that you could actually have a much better tour, and you could, you know, archive that in a digital state to where, you know, there's no way you could actually recreate that better than that. And then it would be able to be free, or I should say available to anybody and everybody everywhere, so that if you couldn't get to Monticello because of whatever the encumbrances in your life were, you would still be able to have the full tour of Thomas Jefferson's Monticello estate. And the same thing with some of these other historic edifices. Why aren't we doing that? And allowing these things to literally let the private sector come in, buy, use, or what have you. And we still have captured the essence of that history. Now, if you've got a better mechanism, then by all means, let me know if you don't think that, because I really think that it is almost, I don't want to say it's a crime, but I think it is, it's retarding our opportunities of being able to do something more with what we currently have available to us today. And so with that, when we come back, I do have a little more news, and then hopefully we'll get into the militia, or I should say marketing. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back talking about the Chinese smartphone manufacturer suing the United States government for violating the Constitution. So we'll be right back at, yeah, that's right, violating the Constitution. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And so remember that Chinese smartphone manufacturer where the, an executive was arrested in Canada and were being extradited to the United States. And we've talked about it here. And I'm not going to look up the name, but the company itself is apparently planning to sue the United States government for banning federal employees from using its devices. So apparently they want to take the moral high ground, even though they're doing all these nefarious things and spying on us and so forth, that they want to, you know, make sure that Americans are getting their constitutionally exercised rights so that they can put these spy phones in the hands of government employees. So I think it's nice to find that the nefarious Chinese and a company, you know, that is a big part of the Communist Party, the Huawei, or however you pronounce it, corporation, these smartphones, and how they're so concerned over our constitutional rights. I wonder if they're suing the Chinese government, this same company, the Huawei company, because they're so concerned about the constitutional rights of Americans, I wonder if they're suing the Chinese government for doing the, you know, for violating the human rights of the Falun Dong and the 300 million political prisoners that they have and using them for live organ harvesting. I wonder if they're doing that. Or maybe they're suing the Chinese government for monitoring and invading their privacy and violating their civil rights regarding this new Chinese social credit system that they're rolling out and enforcing everybody, or actually forcing and compelling everybody to use this system so that they can keep tabs on them. Yeah, I just wonder if they're on that kind of moral high ground, or if they're just using this as a way of skirting the federal government's ban on them and trying to get these spy phones into the hands of government employees. What do you think? Now, in context of the fact that the U.S. government is banning their products just for a select group, what we should do, what the U.S. government should do, is they should ban all computers and technology coming from the Chinese, period, from being sold in America. We should not allow these spy devices to come into America. The Lenovo computer, the Lenovo laptops, you got any of this equipment, you're being spied on, because the Chinese are notorious for invading a person's privacy. They already have the back doors to the Apple phone. And the reason why they're doing that, and they have that, is because that's where Apple is manufacturing their products. And they walk in and they kick all the Apple employees out, and they copy everything from the hardware design, software, and everything else that they're doing. They take their code, they take everything. And so there's no doubt in my mind, they already have the back doors. And if they can remotely, they're getting into your iPhones, just like every other device that they have stolen the technology from. Now, one of the things that is in the news that has been kind of, we knew this was coming, because of the blue wave that we got hit with, the Dems are doing everything they can to retard President Trump's progress. And they are doing this massive investigation into his administration. And what I'm telling you, I told you at the beginning of the show, and actually at the beginning of his presidency on my local show, Trump needs to fully investigate the deep state. He needs to go far and deep in looking at just how bad it is, because we already know it's bad. We haven't hit the bottom yet. And this means we have to kind of explore every nook and cranny of the swamp. This is what he should have been doing. You have to understand, the progressives have no regard for your privacy. And remember, the ends justify the means. The real problem is that Trump keeps nominating deep state attorney generals so that they will not uncover a single stone that will expose the deep state. That's one of the reasons why we're in this situation. I hear all sorts of people telling me, oh, the Q drops are telling us otherwise and so forth. You know what? When I start seeing people in perp walks, when I actually see these things actually happening, okay, all right, I will back off. But I'm not going to back off until I actually start seeing Hillary in the new pink orange, or maybe black and white stripes, you know, and we're not talking Yankee uniforms. And maybe those are blue and white. But anyway, this should give you pause as to why he's not doing this. Out of one side of my mouth today, I'm saying that he's doing all sorts of things that are getting rid of some of these monitoring systems, returning our rights and so forth. But out of the other side of my mouth is, I'm not seeing enough of him going after the corruption and the criminals. We need to start eradicating this. I'm getting very concerned regarding the 2020 election. And really, that's what it comes down to. We have real corruption everywhere, especially in the election system. So he needs to get off the dime here. He needs to really start beating the weeds and getting rid of all of these bad players. Another thing I wanted to get into was China is currently spending more on defense than Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, and Vietnam combined. And the Chinese military is spending on its defense budget on an annual basis only second to the United States, which means Russia isn't even in there in comparison to, what we're spending. The growth in the Chinese military spending is tied to its raising gross domestic product. And what I am telling you is that they are doing this to dominate and control the world. If you understand their ideology, if you understand what they are intending to do, they're not looking to be the crosswalk guards at your school. What they're looking to do is to actually dominate and control every aspect of the world that they possibly can. We, on the other hand, are spending all that money in really trying to keep the world safe. We've been the world's cop. A lot of people have complaints about that. Even I do. I think the world ought to be paying, and maybe we ought to be taking good money from China because they seem to be one of the biggest benefactors of being able to move their commerce from their ports to other ports and other destinations. And so my point is that why are they spending that kind of money while we're creating? If you understand what we're doing, we're actually giving them this free access of trade so that they can become more competitive in competing with us militarily so that they can dominate us. This defies logic, if you understand what I'm saying. But under the progressive administrations of Clinton, Bush, and Obama, we have lost more privacy and rights than one could imagine. And I've been talking about some of these good things that Trump has done, but how much of your cash could have been spent on something that you wanted to go buy? And I'll give you a good example. Because of the Patriot Act, you couldn't go and grab $25,000 in cash to go and buy that Harley Davidson that you really want. Why? Because they have a law against that. We have lost so many of our rights and so much privacy because of these administrations that we have been boxed in, and it's almost like trapping the pig. If you've heard the adage of, building a wall, putting the food out, and then slowly building walls around the pig to where you just put the final wall up while it's grazing. Anyway, that is just one of the aspects that we have lost our rights of property because that money is ours. You should be able to go and get $100,000 in cash out of the bank if you want it. It's yours. You have the right to doing that, but they have a law against you from being able to do that. Another thing that they've been doing is they've been monitoring our phones and texts and all of these things. All of these rights have been taken away since the Clintons, Bushes, and Obama. Under the Trump administration, the security controversy of the NASA phone data collection program, actually, if you hadn't heard, has been shut down and has been shut down for about 6 months now. So when we look at what's been going on regarding, our loss of liberties and our loss of privacy and our freedoms and so forth, Trump has done more in preserving our privileges and our rights and so forth than any other president. I can't think of another president in the past century who has done more in scaling back big government's overreach into our lives. I would just love to see him allow the toilet manufacturers to actually manufacture toilets that will use 5 gallons and 10 gallons to flush instead of this, half a liter crap where you have to flush 3 or 4 times to get you-know-what to the pipe. And so my point is even Reagan may have been a decent president, But he did not scale back big government. Actually, government grew under Reagan as well. So I don't know what the Dems are trying to do in going after Trump and harassing him, but I'm going to tell you that they probably have a very arrogant feeling as to what is going to happen in the upcoming 2020 election. So let me close on that, and then we'll get into the militia when we get right back. So please stay tuned, and we'll talk about the 2020 election and the militias. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so if you ask me, the tactics that you want to use in the 2020 election, if you want to take the White House back, you have to come across as the overly fair. You have to come across as the party that is the reasonable party. And the Democrats are completely emboldened in being unreasonable, tyrannical, and despotic, and fascist. So the question is, why are they doing this if they really look at wanting? Are they throwing the election towards Trump? Or are they emboldened with the fact that they know they have a patent on stealing elections in enough states that they will be able to have the blue wave continue in the 2020 election? We're running out of time. Even if Trump gets elected in 2024, there will be so many more useful idiots in the electorate process that we will not be able to overcome this. They will be able to overcome what's left of the conservatives and those who love liberty. Your kids, your grandchildren who are out in the education or indoctrination system today, when they get out, they are foaming at the mouth and throwing away your liberties as well as theirs. They don't care. They don't believe they're safe with liberties. They believe that the federal government or the government needs to have all the powers necessary to guarantee them safety. And that's what they believe. So that is a great segue into the understanding of the militia, because if you understand the whole point of the militia was
the bastion of liberty. As a matter of fact, I had just read that, and I will read that again at the very beginning of what Governor Randolph said. The militia, okay, so all that we are to infer is that when the civil power is not sufficient, the militia must be drawn out. They are the bulwarks of our liberty. That's what they had put in place with the militia. And so to close out his comments, and this was on June 14th, 1788, in order to produce greater security, the state governments are to appoint the officers. The president who commands them when in actual service of the Union is appointed secondarily by the people. This is a further security. It is not incredible that men who are interested in the happiness of their country, whose friends, relations, and connections must be involved in the fate of their country, should turn against their country. I appeal to every man whether, if any, of our own officers were called up to destroy the liberty of their country, he believes they would assent to such an act of suicide. The state governments, having the power of appointing them, may elect men who are the most remarkable for their virtue of attachment to their country. Now, the next guy up in the militia debate, and this was the 14th and the 16th, where it really just it dominated the conversation. Literally, from the very beginning, from the dawn of the day to the end of the day, it dominated the conversation. And so the next guy up was George Mason on the 14th, who followed Governor Randolph. And he kind of goes on and on about the need. And, you know, George Mason is literally calling and demanding for an amendment to give the states the ability to stop and or have a full check against the federal government's ability to call up the militia. He wanted an amendment because he saw what was put in the Constitution with the calling up of the militia very dangerous. And to be very clear, he was harping and haranguing for this amendment. Now, I ask you, did they get the amendment? No. What ended up standing was how they defined the militia as, like he said, the bulwark of our liberty. The militia was to be the mechanism of choice in enforcing the constitutional laws and to basically stopping these insurrections, rebellions, and so forth. So the next guy up after Mr. Mason was Mr. Clay. And it's kind of funny because in the comments, they usually actually took the quotes of the gentleman. But Mr. Clay, for some reason, this time was speaking very softly. And so they basically, this is how it was written. Mr. Clay, Saturday, June 14, 1788, made several remarks, but he spoke too low. He admitted that he might be mistaken with respect to the exclusion of the civil power in executing the laws, as it was insinuated that he was not under the influence of common sense in making the objection. His error might result from his deficiency in that respect, but he thought that another gentleman was as deficient in common decency as he was in common sense. He was not, however, convinced that the civil power would be employed. If it was meant that the militia could not be called out to execute the laws in all cases, why were they not satisfied with the word repeal, invasion, suppress, insurrections? He thought that the word insurrection included every opposition to the laws, and if so, it would be sufficient to call them forth to suppress insurrections without mentioning that they were to execute the laws of the Union. He added that although the militia officers were appointed by the state governments, yet they were sworn to obey the superior power of Congress. No check or security would result from their nomination of them. In other words, it doesn't matter how you're appointed, they're still taking an oath to support, you know, this evil monster. So Mr. Madison comes up and addresses Mr. Clay. And this is a Saturday, and I want to say that this was the – no, this was not. We got a ways to go. They're like in the middle of the day here. And so Madison goes on and says, "Mr. Chairman, I cannot think that the explanation of the gentleman last up is founded in reason. It does not say that the militia shall be called out in all cases, but in certain cases. There are cases in which the execution of the laws may require the operation of militia, which cannot be said in could not be said to be an invasion or insurrection. There may be resistance to the laws, which cannot be termed an insurrection. My honorable friend over the way has opened a new source of argument. He has introduced the assertion of gentlemen's out of doors. Thus, if we thus depart from regularity, we shall never be able to come to a decision." And so, actually, if I remember correctly, I think Mr. Clay comes back. Yeah. And so Madison goes on and on and on as he insinuates that Clay is kind of, you know, trying to, you know, let a cat out of the bag. And he said, Mr. Clay comes up and says, "I wish to know the instances where opposition to the laws did not come within the idea of an insurrection." And then Madison's retort was, "A riot did not come from within the legal definition of an insurrection. There might be riots to oppose the execution of the laws, which the civil power might not be sufficient to quell. This was one case, and there might probably be other cases." He referred to the candor of the committee, whether the militia could ever be used to destroy themselves. And then at that point, they concluded on the 14th. So I really breezed past what Madison had said. And because Madison was the last up, and because it was a very short address, like he just stated, then he gets the floor coming back on Monday, June 16th. And he starts off with saying, "Mr. Chairman, I endeavor to follow the rule of the House, but must pay due attention to the observations which fell from the gentleman. I should conclude from abstracted reasoning that they were ill-founded. I should think that if there were any object which the general government ought to command, it would be the direction of the national forces." Now, see, he's talking about the militia as the national forces. My friends, we have deviated so far from the understanding of republicanism and our involvements and our requirements of being involved in this constitutional republic that we have gotten this far out to where the federal government is in control of every aspect of our lives when we were supposed to be in control of every aspect of our lives. Madison moves on and says, "And as the forces which lies in the militia is most safe, the direction of that part ought to be submitted to in order to render another force unnecessary, that other force being a standing army. The power objected to is necessary because it is to be employed for national purposes. It is necessary to be given to every government. This is not opinion, but fact. The highest authority may be given that the want of such authority in the government protracted the late war and prolonged its calamities." And so he makes the salient point that they've had nothing but problems with the fact of trying to have if you want to call it a national army in fighting the revolution when it was the militia that was actually the successful contributors. So with that, I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and we'll be back tomorrow. God bless, and we'll have more of this for you tomorrow.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.